This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
There is a queer angle to every issue, and we will find it. But don't expect us to be nice or politically correct. Nothing is sacred, and the team will be finding the queer and profane wherever we can on Joy 94.9. Is nothing sacred?
Hello and welcome to Is Nothing Sacred. We've been abandoned tonight, so at the moment we have myself, Steph, and Kurt in the studio. Hi, Kurt.
Hi, everybody.
Oh, Pat is waving enthusiastically through the window. We have a bit of a mixed bag show tonight. We're going to be talking to someone about their experience of yoga in India, a bit about the clip from the International Women's Day special. We're going to be talking about gender policing, and we have a whole lot of music. We thought we'd take this opportunity to play all the songs that we wanted to play, but that keep getting vetoed by Jim. So we're in control tonight.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station Joy 94.9.
Hello, you are listening to Is Nothing Sacred. We now have more people in the studio. We have Kurt and Jim and Pat. Hello.
How's it going?
Very good. So,
hello, Steph. Hello, listeners. This is Jim, and Pat and I have just been to see John Waters' This Filthy World, Volume 2, down at the Haym Hall.
And we're going to hear about that a little bit later, but first we have Gabby on the line. Hi, Gabby.
Hi, Steph. How are you?
Good. Now, we wanted you to tell our listeners a little bit about your recent travels to India, where I understand you were studying yoga. Can you tell us a bit about that and how that came about?
Yeah, so I've been studying Ashtanga yoga, which is a particular type of yoga that has a focus on a set sequence of postures and also the physical and spiritual practice. And after studying that for 3 years, I came up to a point in my life where I had time to go and devote myself to yoga for a while. So I decided to go and learn from my guru. So I've just been 6 weeks in Mysore studying with
my guru. Does this make you a nun?
No, not even close. Yogis aren't even close to nuns at all. Though we do tend to wear black spandexy stuff. That makes it close.
It's a little bit like a habit. Maybe habits are a bit less fitted than black spandex. What was it like studying in India compared to your usual classes in Australia?
It's kind of hard to compare. I think one of the biggest differences is just that there were so many people who were so devoted to their practice. And I know devotion sounds like, it does make it sound like a religious practice. And in some ways, the spiritual aspect of it is. But having so many people around you who are so in tune to their bodies and who are so focused on their bodies and their breath, it just helps you connect a lot stronger and deeper into your physical practice.
Well, it's interesting you mention religion because we were just talking in the song break about the interaction between religion and yoga, and someone asked, is it religion or is it part relating to religion? What's that relationship?
Yeah, well, I'd like to, it's Jim here, Gab, I'd like to really know what's the relevance of studying it in India for Western practice?
Well, for me, the reason I went is that Ashtanga has a very strong link towards what they call parampara, which is learning through the lineage. So the lineage in Ashtanga was Sri K. Pattabhi Joyce, who was the original guru who started Ashtanga, this particular form anyway. And then his grandson, Shirat Joyce, is now the current, for want of a better word, he's the current head of Ashtanga yoga.
Sounds like the laying on of the hands from St. Peter to all the bishops to all the priests to me.
A lot of religions have that idea of learning through a lineage and learning from a teacher, and it's more like, I guess the better way to describe it, it's more like an apprenticeship. So you go and you work and you have a tutor or a teacher who's there and helps you through your practice and helps you get better at your practice. So it's more like that.
How important do you think that is, I guess, the spiritual side of it compared to people who maybe do yoga at a gym and, you know, go and do it for fitness, sort of Madonna style, you know? I want to get good abs and so I'm going to do yoga. Do you think, what do you think you gain from getting into the spiritual side as well?
It's very different when you start to try and incorporate the spiritual practice. So there's one of the things about Ashtanga is it has these eight limbs. And I guess for me, that's where my practice started to become a lot stronger and a lot more important in my life, is when I started to look into these eight limbs. They're things like do no harm to other people, do no harm to yourself.
Sounds like the Ten Commandments to me.
Yeah, yes, but no. More, not quite so commandment-y, I guess.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's, for me, yoga became much more important when I started to delve into the spiritual practice side of it.
So do you believe in the monkey god and the elephant head god and all that sort of thing yet?
You mean Hanuman and Ganesha?
Yes.
No, I don't. I'm still not religious at all. I'm still very much an atheist. I believe in nature and the world and the way the world works. But no, I'm not at all religious in any sense. But if you pardon the phrase, I guess I'm a little bit more spiritual.
Would you say then, this is Patrick here, Gab, would you say that the spiritual aspect of yoga just it intensifies the physical practice to a point that it ends up being like a holistic type of routine?
Definitely. Mm. The whole point of yoga is that it's supposed to help you in your daily life. It's supposed to become a part of your daily life.
I'm trying my best.
My Sharat was talking one day when I was in India about how yoga is kind of like the suspension on a car, in that it helps to even out the bumpiness in the road. So it helps you try to make sense of everything and to become more clear in your mind and more focused so that you can get through the trials and tribulations and all that sort of stuff.
So for anyone who might be thinking about going to India and studying yoga, what warnings would you have for them? What were some of the hard parts you found?
Definitely do your research. Very definitely. Don't just... One of the things about Ashtanga is that there's so many people who practice now. We had classes starting at 4:30 a.m. and not finishing until 12:30 p.m. midday. So they're very booked. They're very full. Try and find a yoga that you like. There are so many different forms of yoga that people can choose. And look and do your research and try and figure out who your teacher is and what they stand for. That's probably one of the best things.
That sounds like excellent advice. Thank you so much for talking with us today.
That's okay. It was great.
I feel a bit inspired now. I think maybe I should give yoga a go again. We're going to be back after this break.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
You are on Is Nothing Sacred on Joy 94.9. It is 16 minutes past 10. Now, we have our usual co-host in the studio who have just rushed in late, very excited and hyperactive, because they've been... Where have you been, Jim?
We've been down to the Hamer Hall in Melbourne, for those people that are not in Melbourne, which is one of the major venues at the Arts Centre, Victorian Arts Centre. And we've been listening to John Waters' one-person talking word show called This Filthy Word Volume 2, which was a follow-up to a tour that he did in Australia a couple of years ago. And I have to say, he talked about trash, and he's calls himself the Duke of Dirt and all those sorts of... the Prince of Puke and all sorts of stuff like that. And he made that whole series of wonderful, wonderful trash films, which have become cult movies in many ways. And he created stardom for people like Divine and rescued the... Star Power of Mink Stole from the Andy Warhol factory and so on. And he just gives a spoken word of his life and what he thinks is important. And he's very, very funny, and he's very transgressive. And he had a question and answer show at the end, which I wanted to stand up and say, would you just come with us onto Is Nothing Sacred now? But we thought that he might even be too transgressive for us.
Too transgressive for us?
Well, he did talk about things like child abuse and pedophilia and so on, and how he puts those things into his movies and what he thinks about them. And he talked about creating new sexual mores and creating new sexual positions so that people have got things to aspire to. And he invented teabagging, if anybody knows what teabagging is.
Does he set out to be transgressive, or is it a representation of, you know, normal life and trying to be representing that full scope?
No, I think he sets out to be transgressive. I think his life is based on his belief that transgression is worth is sort of revolutionary, and it makes people actually think and question authority and question where the society is and why the society is like it is.
Pushing the limits beyond to realise that humanity has all sorts of scope, and the fact that we keep saying, like, we keep creating these limits, and that they are just, they're just created by ourselves, that they are not actually a limit that is inbuilt in us. So that for me was what stuck out for me. I also like, there is a lot of compassion that he shows, even when he's talking absolute filth about people. Like he talked about Justin Bieber and all these people, but he still has love for these people. Nothing seems like, he's not really too bitchy, for lack of a better word. Yeah, he brings...
He's the number one fan of Justin Bieber.
Yeah, yes. But it's kind of creepy. But he does...
For a 70-year-old man.
But he does mention, there was something towards the end where someone said, oh, what do you think about reality television? And I mean, that's a gold mine, you would think, for John Waters. And he said, I don't really like it. And here's the reason why. He said, because it... it makes you feel superior, that you're looking down on people. And he said, I don't feel that that's not healthy for him. He's like, when we look at these people, we're not saying, oh, how revolting. Like, you know, yeah, it's a bit revolting, but it's never to be as a being evil to them. It's saying this is comedic. There is a reason why. I mean, he talked about using Patty Hearst, who was a kidnap victim and then allegedly held up a bank. And so then he cast her in a film where she was like a mother of a kidnap victim and stuff like that.
Right.
So it's pushing that irony beyond. But then, of course, he finished it off with, what was it? You know the quote.
He made a great comment about reality television, I thought, where he said, you know, when you think about it, they're making money, you're wasting time. Who's better off?
That's very true. That's very true. But I think I feel that concern with reality TV as well, you know, and watching something like The Biggest Loser. And I heard one argument that The Biggest Loser actually causes people to gain weight because they watch it and go, well, at least I'm not like them. And it sort of, you know, normalises particular patterns of behaviour.
I know. That's what I did when I watched that show. I used to just find the ridiculous irony of the name. It's like, you're The Biggest Loser. And I know why it's there, is that you're the one who lost the most weight. But dear God, there is still something that is going, you're a loser, because you're obese. And it's very, very mean.
Well, that's the whole
mean.
Point of it. It doesn't work. Those sorts of things don't work. And they're doing the one in Ararat at the moment for the whole town. And while the whole town's got behind it, you really need to have it more than just the whole town. You know, it's got to be so systematised.
But is it a whole town better than just one person in terms of changing behaviour?
Well, it is, because it takes it to a population level and therefore you get a bigger impact.
However, they do mention, they don't really talk about, I know from the bits that I've seen, they don't really teach healthy eating habits. Like, you've got to work out things for what are you going to choose to eat. Like, so are you going to choose all greens or all meats? That's not how it works. That's not how nutrition works. You can't just starve yourself or just eat this. Or, like we all see, but with low-carb diets, everyone says they're actually very ineffective. Yeah, for the short-term period, you can do the Atkins, but that's not good for you, because then you'll just, as soon as you eat the bread again.
Well, there was the new research that came out, was it this last week, I think, about the paleo diet and how it caused people to lose weight and then die earlier.
Yeah.
In summary, that was my understanding of it.
Well, I've recently been on not a diet for my weight, just because I can't keep anything down because I've been unwell. And that's been great, because basically it's like, look at how slim I am. But as soon as this stops, I am going to get back to the...
Donuts.
He's going to
buy Krispy Kremes or something like
that. Of course, because, you know, all you can imagine is me at home with the Krispy Kremes, putting on Daria and just going, yep, this is my life. Daria.
Joy 94.9 is a GLBTIQ community radio station in Melbourne, Australia. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
You're on Is Nothing Sacred on Joy 94.9.
Woohoo!
This is Jim, and I'm here with Pat and Steph on the panel, and Kurt. And we've got a message from Jody from Absolutely Everybody, which is the Inecto show on Wednesday at noon on Joy 94.9. And Jody's in Sydney listening to us live streaming. So she's live streaming either on her computer or she may be live streaming on her phone app. And you can get the phone app too by just going to joy.org.au and downloading it. And there's a phone app for both iPhone and Android. And you can also SMS us in or text in to us as well and tell us what you think about the show or what you'd like to hear. You can either text on SMS on 0427JOY949, or you can email us on onair@joy.org.au, or you can actually phone the front desk on 1300JOY949 if Robert's there. I'm not sure that he is.
I don't think he's there.
Unfortunately, he's not, but yeah. I can go out and I can answer the phone.
But if you do that, Pat will answer the phone.
And I would respond with glee.
And so Jodie tells us that she loves yoga and David Bowie. So we would also like to hear what you love or also things maybe you don't like so much, because it's a bit of a mixed bag show tonight. You could even...
But doesn't everybody love David Bowie?
Yeah, I think we do. Maybe not so much
My
the
mother
tight
doesn't,
pants.
Weirdly.
But, you
really?
Know...
He's That's a sort of that. Music institution, isn't he?
I think there needs to be a video now of me doing yoga to David Bowie. So we're going to do that.
How about we say this? If anyone texts or emails us and requests a video of Pat doing yoga to David Bowie, we will record it and put it on the Facebook page. If
we
so,
will.
If that's what you want to see, then...
In the outfit of your choice, but I must be wearing something.
So if
well,
you want to see
Waters
that...
As John Waters says, you must be wearing either a Band-Aid or a rubber band.
Oh, dear. Okay, before this gets any more dirty, we're going to take...
You should never go naked anywhere in regards of how beautiful you are. He said you should always wear a Band-Aid or a rubber band.
Is that one of your sayings now, Jim?
Well, it'll have to be, I think. But he said it because he said even though the people with the most perfect bodies have got most perfect bodies, there's always something, you know, slightly wrong with everybody, and you should make sure that that you don't let down the whole of the world by... doing that.
Oh, dear.
Speaking right. of physical enjoyment and expression, we have Steph talking with the circus group, correct?
Yeah. So some of you might have heard on Saturday, Joy did an International Women's Day special where we had 2 hours with a lot of the presenters, female presenters from Joy, sort of came together to produce a show with bits and pieces. And then there was a big event here at Joy on Saturday to celebrate International Women's Day, which, of course, we very much support all the women of the world.
Every day is International Women's Day.
And if you didn't hear the show on Saturday morning, it has been podcast and it was a great show. I listened to it at home.
And so what I've got here is the clip that I put together, which is interviewing some people from the Women's Circus about their experience and how the circus has impacted on their lives.
You're listening to
Hi,
Is Nothing
I'm
Safe.
I'm Steph for the Joy 94.9 International Women's Day special, reporting on the Women's Circus right here in Melbourne. For this report, I went along to an acrobalance class and spoke to two Women's Circus members, Miki and Kate. The Women's Circus started over 20 years ago with a particular focus on supporting women who had been victims of sexual assault. Kate talked to me about her experience of sexual assault and how the Women's Circus supported her and made her feel more confident about her own body and her abilities.
So I first heard about the Women's Circus through a friend who had joined, and I had some pretty significant mental health issues and had not very long been out of an abusive relationship and had experienced sexual assault. And I wouldn't have joined the Women's Circus had it not been a women's only space, because at that time I was really scared of men because I had been assaulted by more than one man. So I started in the new women's program in 2009, and it was just amazing that we got to try so many different things which I'd never tried with my body before. And as you'd start to get into it, and as you'd start to, you know, just warm up and stretch and have fun, because it was so much based around fun, you'd start to just loosen up a little bit. And I could guarantee that if my mood was a 3 when I turned up, it was a 4 when I left. And it really challenged what I thought of about my body. Even just things like I'd always been told I was a klutz, that I was just klutzy, and it turns out I can still walk. And you think, I've just believed this for so long that I never even thought to test it out until someone presents you with something that's so completely outside your everyday experience that you just think, well, why not? I'll just give it a go. It's, you know, I don't know how I'll do it. This, I haven't tried anything like it before. And then you do it, you're like, hang on a second, I can walk around this room on sticks. Of course I can do anything.
Miki trained with the circus for a few years before starting her own circus troupe, ABC Circus Education, who have a show at the International Comedy Festival in Melbourne coming up later this year.
So I came to the Women's Circus with a gymnastics background. I wasn't a complete beginner, but I worked alongside complete beginners, and it really was so inspiring to see trainers like Sal Francis just bring out the absolute best in everyone that she worked with. And it gave me the confidence to try things that I'd never thought about doing before. So I tried juggling, hula hoops, Chinese pole, doubles trapeze, which is kind of like acrobalance, but you're in the air holding people up. And I love that range of skills. And what I loved about women's circus is you didn't just learn the tricks and go home, which was my experience of adult gymnastics, but you actually built shows. And through that, you made amazing connections. And, you know, we did a show at the Adelaide Fringe Festival, and we toured a show to France. And, you know, in France, we worked with women from refugee backgrounds. And it really showed me that it doesn't matter what you can do, it matters what you want to do. The skills I already had were already enough to make shows with and enough to do things with. And I think that was one of the things that gave me the confidence to then start performing my own shows and writing my own shows. Partly was the networks that were formed and meeting people like Anna Thompson. And I guess one of the things I want to teach kids when I run workshops and when we perform in Time Out is that playfulness doesn't end in childhood, that, you know, you already have everything you need. So, for example, in Time Out, the kids leave all of their technology behind, all of their toys, and they're left with this bag of recycling, and they have this question of what can we do? And you find that through shadow puppetry, through juggling, through building creatures, you can actually create everything out of your imagination. Just having friends around you, just having your imagination and your body, you can do amazing things. And we really try to show that to everyone that we work with.
Let's go again.
You can find more Joycasts and show blogs. Go to joy.org.au.
You're on Is Nothing Sacred on Joy 94.9. This is Jim, and I'm here with Kurt, Pat and Steph doing the panelling tonight. Good on you, Steph. And we're talking all sorts of things tonight. We've been talking about yoga in India. We've been talking about the John Waters show that was on at Hamer Hall tonight. We're going to talk about gender policing.
Yeah, this is something that I feel quite strongly about, particularly the gender policing of children. So to get clear about what we're talking about situations where people in society try to force particular ways of expressing gender on people. Mm. So, for example, when someone acts in a way that's a bit outside the norm, that they get shut down, such as a girl playing with a tractor or a boy playing with a Barbie, and
you shouldn't be playing with that.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's a girl's toy.
It's talking about the gender binaries that occur and are implemented in day-to-day life. Mainly on children, I think, is where you initially see it, because they can't respond as such, or they don't know how to respond with the complex narrative of going, Up yours, mum and dad. I am allowed to play with a doll as much. I was lucky. I had a Jemima doll. I still do. It has permanent marker all over it. And my parents let me play with it. And when...
Did you cut its hair?
No, I didn't, actually. I've never been a hairdresser. But I do not feel like I missed out on anything in a childhood because I had that.
I do remember that my very, very girly little sister cut all the hair off my later-to-be-lesbian sister's dolls. She was so angry with her for something, she cut all their hair off.
Does it matter that she's a lesbian?
Well, I just thought it was interesting because it was not the right binary behaviours.
But even really, talking about the right binary behaviour is
exactly
gender policing in itself.
Yeah, that is right. But, you know, gender policing starts well before that. You might think it all starts with children, but it in fact starts with fetuses because as soon as, and especially these days where for some unknown reason women all want to know what the sex of their baby is going to be before it's born. I think it's crazy. Why do you want to know that? Why not just accept what you've got? You have to work with it.
Well, yeah, in the sense that you're saying things like they'll hear whether it's a boy or a girl, and based on that, paint the room.
They will,
blue
and
or
they will,
pink.
And they will have a name chosen, and they will have and they will have all the clothes picked out, and they'll have told everybody, oh, I'm having a little boy, and so everybody will buy them blue things, or having a little girl, and they get lots
of
pink.
But the interesting thing is, before the war, it wasn't like that. It actually...
No, not at all.
That's an advertising slogan.
Well, I heard a bit of a dark story. I don't know if it's true or not, so I don't know if I'm spreading rumours, but that previously, little boys used to wear pink as a kind of variation of red, which was seen as more of a masculine colour, and little girls used to wear blue as a, you know, I guess the converse of that, as a pretty, like, blue sky.
And a cool colour as well.
A cool colour, nice and calm. But the dark story that I heard was that the colouring was actually influenced by the Nazis, with gay men being given pink triangles, and hence from that pink got associated with being not very manly, which led to people no longer dressing their boys in pink clothes.
I don't know about the jump between them, but I'd believe that there is some connection there. Maybe not as extreme as such, but I do feel like there is some. There must be some.
Well, we should go and
that.
Find out a bit more about this, because I did actually read something recently that said that if you actually give children choices in colours, boys invariably go for the reds and pinks, and girls go for the blues and greens. And
there is something there.
Well, I think at a very young age that might be the case, but then once the children get to a particular age, they feel
They've
the pressure
learnt.
To pick the right colour. And there are some. I was talking to someone recently about raising children gender neutral, which I know some parents are trying to do in Australia, but in Sweden as well, there's a gender neutral kindergarten where children are treated in the same way regardless of gender. They use gender-neutral pronouns. I think it'd be very challenging in Australia. It's a great thing to try.
It's going to be very challenging. But Sweden also has a lot of those. What was it, the catalogue that kept getting pulled around at the moment? And the catalogue had something along the lines of that the boys were playing with dolls and trucks. And I think that's more important than not just saying that boys can play with dolls and that's it, or girls can play with trucks. Play with whatever you want. Yeah. Go nuts. Use
the
Play-Doh.
Well, they should just be all mixed up, because as soon as you actually have representations of girls playing with trucks and boys playing with dolls, you're just reversing the,
exactly.
the gender policing.
But I feel like this, you know, if we're talking about the childhood play thing, I feel like it's getting worse, in the sense that if you go into a toy shop now, almost all clothes are gendered. Oh, sorry, all toys are gendered. And in clothes shops as well, you have very gendered clothes.
Like, it's marketing.
Well, but I don't. Is there a demand for it? What is driving this?
And I actually saw something just recently on good old Facebook. That was a clip of young girls complaining about going into a very large and well-known toy shop about how all the exciting toys were in the boys' section and not in the girls' section, and they all ran down to the boys' section, the so-called boys' section.
What would be pushing that, though, I wonder?
And Lego is one of the big...
Lego, yes.
...is one of the big problems.
Because that used to be a gender-neutral kind of toy.
It used to be gender-neutral, and it's become very gender, because most of the action figures in Lego are now male.
Although I got to say, I was really lucky. I had those Duplo Legos, so the big ones, and God, I love them. But I loved it because, although, you know how there was that thing that was being passed around recently about a girl who sent in a message to Lego, and she said, why are there not any women doctors? Yeah. And it was brilliant because, you know, it's spelled badly and it's with crayon, and you're just like, oh my God, this woman is awesome. This little girl is awesome. But I had quite progressive, that sounds awful, but I had a female pilot in my group, and I was like, this is amazing, and I thought it was my favourite Lego toy. For no reason except that, I mean, she had cool eyebrows, and plus she had an amazing helmet. And I don't know what that says about me, but...
You like helmets.
I enjoy helmets, yes.
I think that's what it says.
If you've got a bike, let me know. It frustrates me, though, because obviously that has switched now, and I think that now... I mean, but then it's when you get smaller and the little Lego, and they are invariably... gendered as male.
Oh, bad luck, Patrick. Jeff's just sent in another SMS saying that he thinks he will just watch because he's never tried yoga.
All right, well, that's
okay. You might
okay.
actually convert him to yoga.
For anyone who just tuned in, we made an offer previously that said if anyone texts in and requests a video of Patrick doing yoga to David Bowie, we would provide that video online. Jeff from Reservoir has texted in and was offered the opportunity to partake, but he will be watching.
I see. We'll have to pick the David Bowie song later. But back to gender, which is kind of funny when we talk about David Bowie in this case, because he is absolutely brilliant for, I suppose, playing around with the constraints of gender very early in his career. We talk a lot about androgyny. We talk a lot about misgendering here. And I find that someone like the David Bowies, like Grace Jones, who I'm going to play next week.
I mean, even though I've been mostly speaking about children, I still feel like gender policing continues into adulthood. Like, I feel like I was going to say I experience it every day. It's not necessarily
what
true.
What do you experience? experience? Because I experienced something as well.
Yeah, okay. So things like if I'm wearing a dress, I get told that I look very pretty. Oh, you look so pretty. I
straightened
my hair.
We did that to you last week.
Yeah, exactly.
Whereas well, the reason for that was because you hardly ever do wear a dress.
But that's the thing.
Yeah, if I wear something a bit more androgynous, I'm less likely to get positive feedback would be one thing. Another thing would be that women talk about if they're having a bad day and are angry and they get told, oh, you know, cheer up, smile, it's not that bad, with this kind of expectation that women shouldn't be worrying their pretty little heads about the stresses of the world.
Well, there is actually some research that shows that if you actually observe meetings where there are women participating and men, the women smile a lot more than the men do in the meetings. And what's more, they smile at particular places and they smile at particular people.
But
usually
that...
it's a calming, it's an attempt to calm down conflict and
well,
to prevent conflict.
It can be a strategy, but
that's
mean...
That's what I'm thinking. Is it also a strategy, though?
Well, it is a strategy, but, I mean, there's been feminist writers who...
It might
who
be are... self-policing, in fact.
Well, I think there is some self-policing, but often I would argue a lot of it comes... externally.
Oh, no, definitely. Externally would be...
Mm. Or, I mean, another example sort of to go the converse, because I think it comes from within the queer community as well, in the sense that, you know, sometimes I joke about, like, oh, I'm so butch, look at my big muscles, you know, when I'm wearing, like, a mini skirt and a floral T-shirt. And people say, oh, no, you're not butch. You know, that's not... You don't look very butch to me. And I think, well, maybe that is my identity and I feel pressured into wearing mini skirts and floral tops.
When I had a situation
it's
on... well, when you have a situation in, I suppose, the queer male community as such, we have where they put up on Grindr and hookup apps like that where they talk about masculine looking for masculine and no femmes. I mean, it extends further on by that with race, but speaking about gender and gender identity as such and also how you express your gender, they're very, very strict and heteronormative in the way that they like to have these, you know, they say, oh, this is one of the common ones, which I even was guilty of this. Oh, this is when I first came out, which was the, oh, if I wanted to end up with, like, girly-looking guys, I'd just end up with a chick. And that kind of douchebag comment. Yeah, ew, ew, yeah. Because then I'm like, I'm going to embrace the femininity because, you know what, screw it. I love it and I look awesome. So
what do you think, Kurt? What's your trans perspective?
My trans perspective, I'm not really sure. Look, I just think that it all starts from a young age. We all get gender policed when we're young, and if we're not performing particularly well in a certain thing that's the gender we've been assigned to at birth, we get policed even harder. And I think there's a lot more gender policing goes on when it's about men and males, because I think it's sort of, it's looked... a lot more down upon if a male is a bit more feminine.
Yeah, because boys could never be sissies, but girls being tomboys was actually okay.
It was okay.
Only if they were good at sport.
In a way,
as a tomboy crap at sport, it's not so great.
Well, when I grew up in the country, you know, tomboys were sort of celebrated, and often they would be part of gangs of kids, which were all boys.
Yeah,
but to see a sissy boxer. Sorry.
I think being a tomboy is seen as just a phase rather than if a boy is...
We can go back to Pat's example of what's on the dating apps. I think a lot of those gender appellations on there are actually codes for the type of sexual activity that people want. And so...
How so?
That is another insidious way of gender policing, probably.
As in, like, saying what type do you
Well, you
like?
Know, if people say, I want someone masculine, they actually mean they want a top.
Yeah.
Oh, it depends.
Does that necessarily have to go? Isn't that creating another binary?
That does
Making
create another binary.
Making assumptions about what people want based on how they present?
And that goes further in terms of that they will always think every femme is going to be the passive in the relationship. But the reality is, and I know for a fact, I've seen many feminine active, like, in the active role in, gosh, it always comes down to two. Yeah. It really sucks.
You've seen many. I'm going to be following Patrick around next time we go out.
Many genders, many identities.
Yeah, and it's the way that I looked at this, this was when I was first learning about the difference between sex and gender. This was quite a few years ago with 2010 in Newtown, which is in Sydney. Fantastic organisation for young youth queers. They basically, I came up with the idea as okay, there may be two ingredients, but how it comes together is just going to be, you know, it all comes under different ratios and how you interpret, and it's every day will change. I mean, I'm talking this from a cisgendered perspective, I'm sure, and as Kurt's pointed out, it's a lot harder, I suppose, as a trans person, especially before you come out, when you are, when there's a lot of gender policing and there, yeah, and you're going, this isn't, no, yeah, no, yeah, this isn't, not at all. And, mm, I mean, we're talking in grey areas. I suppose for you it's more of an extreme, correct?
Yeah, definitely. I would say that's just hell, but, having to wear a dress when I was younger. Like, that is my definition of hell.
But was it easier to be a trans child in the world of acceptability of tomboys than... It would,
yeah,
have,
yeah,
been
definitely.
Being a trans child, if you were a boy who wanted to be a girl, and therefore you were sissy.
Definitely, my parents were quite happy to let me have short hair and play with trucks and play football and get muddy
and wear overalls and jeans
wear
and
overalls,
t-shirts.
Yep, and they had no idea what was going on. They just thought I thought it was fun to have short hair and play football.
We'll be talking a little bit more about this when we come back. You're listening to Is Nothing Sacred on Joy 94.9.
To find out more about Joy 94.9, check out joy.org.au.
You're on Joy 94.9. This is Nothing Sacred, and we're coming to the end of the show. Thanks, everybody, for participating. And thank you to Jeff from Reservoir for messaging in about Patrick's yoga demonstration next week. And just walked into the studio is Mark, who's here for In the Woods with the Bears.
That's right. Hello. Guys,
and we believe that the Bears are going to be really stereotypically gay tonight and play Britney Spears.
Oh, well, to start with, it is three. So the subject tonight is open relationships or monogamy. So it's actually really interesting. It's the show that's actually caused the most pre-show conversation on our Facebook page.
It's a sort of, yeah, it's a sort of show that we could be having on Is Nothing Sacred.
Exactly, exactly. But we're targeting the Bears and the Bear community.
Hello, Bears.
Yeah, so it's been quite, I think, a little bit controversial for us. It's our first real controversial show.
Oh, good. Excellent. Yes. I'll be listening to that in the car on
Jim
the way home.
Jim will be texting.
Yes, he will.
Well, I always
and
do,
ringing,
don't I?
And emailing and
everything. I think Jim texts in on every show on Joy.
I'm just so glad that we've rubbed off on you, my dear.
Yes, exactly. We want a bit of controversy
we
in the show.
We won't talk
now,
to you about,
yes,
what John Waters said tonight about bears at his show.
Oh, what did he say?
Well, he basically said, look, when you come out, and then people sit down and go, oh, Mum, Dad, I'm gay, and then they go, oh, I've got something else to tell you. Grrr, I'm a bear. He said, go back into that closet. You don't need to tell everybody you're a bear as well as being gay.
No, I don't tell everyone I'm a bear. I think that's obvious.
Well, yeah. But, and then he pointed out that most heterosexual men in their middle age were bears because most of them were larger, a bit overweight and hairy. And
well, that's it. It's becoming harder and harder.
And that all the gay people in the audience knew what a bear was, but none of the straights in the audience knew what a bear was. But there are a lot more straight bears in the audience than gay bears, he thought.
Yeah. Well, probably. It's getting harder these days to tell. You used to walk down Oxford Street in Sydney or something, and there was bears all around. But these days, you've got to be careful because you don't know if it is a bear or not. Awesome. It's like you're walking to Bunnings. Hello.
Well, that is true.
Yeah.
You mean my hunting ground?
I think it's a lot of people's hunting ground, Patrick.
I think you have many hunting grounds, Patrick.
Shut up.
In case
yoga,
you didn't know.
Yoga classes, Patrick.
Pat is single and looking, so, you know, yeah, drop us a line.
Which Bunnings do you go to, Patrick?
And you'll be seeing Patrick on our Facebook page fairly soon doing yoga.
Patrick goes to any Bunnings with a sausage sizzle.
Okay. It is now 1 minute to 11, so it's the end of Is Nothing Sacred for this week. Thanks, Steph, for panelling.
And thank you, Gabby, for calling in and chatting to us about India and for the report.
And thanks to Christian for the Vixen Hour before us.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.